The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
America, bonjour, hi, Kennedy, Hugh Hewitt, live inside the Beltway where it is finally not raining. A good Friday to you. I hope you have a great weekend planned. Thank you for beginning it with me. Let's get to the rundown. The biggest news by far for Americans, and it will continue to be news for as long as she serves on the nation's highest court, is the confirmation yesterday of Judge Brown Jackson to become Justice Brown Jackson when Stephen Breyer retires in early July. She has not been appointed to the court yet. She's just been confirmed to the court for the vacancy that Stephen Breyer announced will occur in the summer. Congratulations to Judge Brown Jackson. It will be a 6-3 court on many, many occasions, occasionally 5-4. Occasionally the liberals will win because there are some conservatives on the court who believe, for example, in defense rights and the rights of the accused quite significantly. And therefore, it's a wait and see. But I think she will reliably vote with Justice Sotomayor more than 95% of the time. To the international news, a rocket attack has killed more than 30 at a railway station in eastern Ukraine as Russia presses its, quote, offensive. It's not an offensive when you just rain down missiles on defenseless people at train stations in the Donbass. That's in the Wall Street Journal this morning. NATO, according to Financial Times, has agreed to supply new types of advanced weaponry to Ukraine. And that is good news. Send all the weapons you can, send as many as can, send them as fast as you can. Donbass showdown, according to the Telegraph, will be like the Second World War. That's according to Liz Truss, the foreign secretary. She said the alliance counterparts met in Brussels. This is from the Telegraph. Agreed to supply Soviet-era equipment to the NATO standard. We are watching the Russian army prepare to launch a major offensive in the Donbass. And now there is a request from Ukraine, urgent, get us tanks, get us tank killers, get us ready to defend. In eastern Ukraine, according to the Washington Post, Russian military is raising towns to take them over. And you know the old line, destroy the village to save it, that originated the Vietnam protest. Well, that's actually happening in Ukraine. The Russian Russian forces are just rolling over towns. But the blowback has begun in Russia as they leave their dead behind. Their original slogan was, we don't leave ours behind, but they have. And there are between 7,000 and 15,000 dead Russians after 6 weeks of war, which is sort of an astonishing range, with a factor of 100% from 7,000 to 15,000, more than 100%. But in 10 years of war in Afghanistan, 14,453 Russian soldiers died. In all of the two Chechen wars, 11,000 Russian soldiers died. So they are obviously getting killed at a record pace. There are lots of grieving spouses and mothers and fathers and brothers and sisters. Putin, there are some Russians who say now kill them all in Ukraine because my boy is dead. That is not the way most Russians feel, except Putin, who is crazed, of course. The Senate voted yesterday, along with the House, to strip Russia of favored trade status and to back the Biden oil ban. The latter came from the House. It will pass. But the Senate voted 100-0 on a substantive matter to strip Russia of most favored trade status. That is significant. That means from Bernie Sanders on the left to Rand Paul on the right, when it comes to national security issues, they all agree, everyone, from the left to right, throw Russia out of the trading regime, isolated from the world economy. That is good news. How Russia used a ragtag arsenal to thwart Russia's air attacks is absolutely addictive. It is a story in the Wall Street Journal this morning on how they got together. They used their time wisely and the Trump administration's armaments very wisely to prepare to shoot down the effort by Russia to dominate the air. They don't have air domination. We've never seen a war since World War II. The middle portion of World War II, where one of the other combatants didn't have clear air superiority. And what results when one doesn't, when Russia can't fly its planes because Ukraine has sophisticated anti-aircraft batteries, is what you see. On the ground, massive losses. There is a natural 3-to-1 advantage for the defense. If NATO gets them the weapons, Ukraine can win the war. Another terror attack overnight in Israel. A gunman opened fire on a bar, killing two. There was a massive manhunt. I quote from the Times of Israel, the terrorist who carried out the deadly shooting attack in Tel Aviv was killed in a shootout early Friday morning following a massive hours-long manhunt across the Tel Aviv waterfront. He was identified as a 28-year-old Ra'ad Hazim from the Jenin in the northern West Bank. This is, I believe, the fourth terror attack in 2 weeks. There was a time when I would do this show in the afternoon, and I came in every day, and there was another terror attack in Israel. They built the wall, and it stopped, but this is the rumblings of this is very bad. I think they got to get back to Netanyahu. I think the weak government from the center to the left is falling apart because Israelis don't like this. They don't like Iran getting close to a nuclear weapon. You know, the only Substack I subscribe to is John Ellis, news from John Ellis. And I do it because he reads everything in the world. I try and keep up, but I can't. I have to do things like special report last night. Before I read you the Ellis thing, in fact, let me go to the special report panel last night because I was pleased with myself, and I don't mind telling you that. Last night, Mike Emanuel sitting in for Brett. Brett had interviewed Leader McConnell on the Hill and did not get back to the studio. We were in studio. That's the first time I've done a studio panel in more than 2 years. We've been doing, you know, boxes. Last time I did a studio panel was a Meet the Press panel in 2020. And so we're back in studio, and it's great. It's fun. I saw Juan Williams, Ben Domenech in the green room. We had a great chat with Mike Emanuel, and we got on. And I wanted to reflect on the interview. Mike tosses it to me that Brett Barrett conducted with Leader McConnell. Cut number two.
Three Republicans voting yay, Collins, Murkowski, and Romney. Hugh, your thoughts on where we stand heading into the Easter recess, excuse me.
Well, I think they got a lot of problems left to resolve. I found the interview that Brett did with the leader very, very revealing. The leader is 9 months older than the president. He was born on February 20th, 9 months before President Biden. And Leader McConnell is in complete control of that interview. Brett asked tough questions. They were obviously not rehearsed. He didn't know it was coming. He hit it out of the park every time. He explained why he voted against Judge Jackson and why her justice confirmation hearings are different from those that assaulted Kavanaugh. And I just sat there thinking to myself, I think the president could learn from the leader that he ought to sit down with people like Brett and have conversations like that to demonstrate that he's not infirm and that he's in control, because the leader was in control. He got his message out, even in the face of tough, sustained questions.
That, you know, I thought that was I looked up their birthdays. Mitch McConnell was born on February 20th of 1942. Joe Biden was born on November 20th of 1942. And McConnell's in complete command. He's not infirm at all. He's completely in command of the situation. And Brett is coming at him, throwing fastballs right down the middle. And McConnell's sitting there, and he's hitting him because he's been doing it a long time. He's in fully physically in command of his capabilities. I think the president is infirm. Then we got around to the decision by the Biden administration to lift Title 42, Section 265, and allow people to come in from Mexico. Cut number three.
The thing about Title 42 is the courts have said it was a workaround. It was supposed to be for the height of COVID. Now the courts are saying, well, people are walking around. We're back on the panel. Why are you still using it?
Because Title 42, Section 265, passed in 1944, exists for exactly the situation in Mexico where they have COVID not under control. And the idea that they would lift Title 42, Section 265, I'm all for Greg Abbott. Greg Abbott has done a brilliant thing. Bring them to Lafayette Park and let the federal district deal with them.
I agree with, by the way, I think that should happen. I had one more exchange on the panel last night. I'll just jam it in here. Cut number four on the Gridiron Super Spreader event.
Pray for the speaker. She's going to recover. She's had two boosters on top of two doses. I'm just waiting to hear the word super spreader. Remember when Amy Coney Barrett's event was held at the White House and they said about it, super spreader, super spreader. Well, the Gridiron is a super spreader and the White House signing ceremony is a super spreader. But legacy media won't call it that because it was used to hurt President Trump. It doesn't want to be hurt again.
And to that point,
Mike Emanuel comes in and you just can't avoid it. I am watching the media try and work around the term super spreader because they don't want to say that about press events or Democratic presidential events when they couldn't wait to say it about every Trump event. It's just the legacy media is so deeply biased. When we come back, I will tell you what John Ellis wrote. I have to read it to you. It will take longer than a minute. But let me tell you, it's a remarkable state of affairs in China right now. It's a remarkable state of affairs everywhere. There's going to be quite a weekend ahead. Don't go anywhere. I love my Friday show. The Hillsdale Dialogue is coming up. David McCormick, who is running for Senate in Pennsylvania, Army Ranger and 82nd Airborne member. They're all coming along. Don't go anywhere. It's Hugh Hewitt. America, I'm Hugh Hewitt. Hollywood is going to fight back this weekend, but it's fighting back against the Masters with Tiger Woods and, of course, Warren Ohio's finest, Jason Kokrak, at 2 under, 3 back. The Frozen Four culminates with the Minnesota State Mavericks versus the University of Denver Pioneers on Saturday. I just don't know if I'm going to find time to go to the movies, and Sonny Bunch is here to tell me whether or not ambulance ought to get me there. Hello, Sonny.
Well, I can't say for sure about that because I have purchased tickets to see Ambulance today at 12:20 Central Time. So I'll let you know in the future. I am looking forward to it because I do quite like Michael Bay, and I
so
think he
I.
is a
yeah.
one of our finest filmmakers in the big budget spectacle realm. So
you are not prepared to give me a warning or non-warning yet because you haven't seen it.
I cannot warn you one way or the other. You know, it's funny, you mentioned the Masters, and I never used to be this person, but I have become this person, the only super interested in tuning in to golf when Tiger Woods is playing. And I don't know why I have evolved into this person. It never used to be me, but man, I was watching last night or yesterday afternoon as he was finishing his round and doing a little fist pump there at the end when he got that par. To go into the clubhouse at 1 under. So.
Well, you know, you almost lose your life. You almost use your leg. And the greatest golfer of all time comes in at 1 under on Augusta. And I turned into this person years ago. This is the golf tournament that I watch. And the Fetching Mrs. Hewitt just leaves me alone on Saturday afternoon. Sunday afternoon, Jason Kokrak is from my high school. He played on my golf. So I have lots of interest in it, but I love Augusta. I just love the whole spectacle. And you know, I'd shoot 140 if I played that course, but it's a wonderful production. Have you noticed the production values of the broadcast, Sonny? They're so superb.
I was watching on ESPN Plus, so I don't know if it's slightly different, but man, it does look great. It's really well done, and it is funny how much golf. More than really any other sport, I think, has been helped by HD TV and the ability to really kind of see everything so much more clearly. You know, the other would be hockey, but I'm not really a hockey guy.
I'm the commissioner of hockey by designation of Tim Pawlenty in Minnesota, and therefore I have to pay attention. We got University of Minnesota and Minnesota State to the Frozen Four this year. I also root for Miami. They didn't make it. Sonny, let me talk to you a little bit about the Masters production, though. When you've got that many cameras, I don't know how many cameras they have on the course. You got to get the shot at all times. I'm just amazed at how they always get the shot. They must have 70 cameras running around. I don't know how many cameras Michael Bay uses to film Ambulance, but it's got to be about the same as they use at Augusta.
Well, Michael Bay blows up more cameras. Then they blow up that account. So yeah. that's one difference.
All right.
In the new Michael Bay, he has started using drone camera footage, which is very exciting. An evolution in the Michael Bay aesthetic of Bayhem. I'm very I have purchased tickets like a normal movie consumer. They didn't screen it for critics out here in Dallas, but they did in DC, New York, elsewhere, and I've heard mostly good things, 90% good things. So
okay, well, we will find out next week. I have to ask you, one of my regular listeners and a good pal is Archbishop Jeff Pugh in Philadelphia. He told me to go, and he's very Spartan in his praise of movies. He said, go see The Outfit. Now, I can't find The Outfit anywhere. Did you see The Outfit?
No, it's already out of theaters. You're just going to want to wait for that to hit VOD. It should be on VOD here in a week or two.
Right.
But I've heard good things about that as well. But I didn't catch it because it was in theaters here for like 10 days. So
by the time I got his email, it was gone from Virginia. So yeah. I was hoping that it was going to come, but you're telling me it's already gone.
It's already gone. Here's a movie that you have to see in theaters, Hugh. And you got to go this weekend. You got to pull yourself away from the Masters. Once Tiger's in the clubhouse today or maybe tomorrow, you know, maybe you can go in the morning and catch the back half of his 18. But here's a movie you got to see in theaters. It's a movie that blew me away when I saw it. It's the best movie I've seen this year. Maybe the best movie I saw I've seen in the last, I don't know, 2 years. A movie called Everything, Everywhere, All at Once. Okay. So this is it's an indie-ish film. I mean, it's probably a $25 or $30 million production. So it's not super indie. And it's hard to describe. And I mean that quite literally. It's a very hard movie to describe. But here are the basic plot points. Michelle Yeoh, the famed actress slash martial artist. She plays an immigrant to America who runs a laundromat with her husband, who is played by Ki Hui Kwan, who folks will remember as Short Round from Indiana Jones. He also played Data in The Goonies, but he's a child actor. He was a child actor. He basically stopped acting, but people were very excited to see him again. So these two run this laundromat. Their daughter is, you know, kind of a typical first generation immigrant child, you know, kind of breaking away from her parents, straining against the old ways. And they live with Michelle Yeoh's character's father, who's played by the great James Hong, who you will recognize from a million things. Maybe most famously, he played the older Asian father in the Wayne's World movies, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so that's the base family. You have this immigrant family. And in
Everything, Everywhere, All at Once. I just want to get people.
Everything, Everywhere, All at Once. I'll repeat it as many times as I can. So in Everything, Everywhere, All at Once, the reason it is called this is because Michelle Yeoh gets pulled into the multiverse. Okay, so the multiverse is a concept that we all have much familiarity with, thanks to the Marvel movies and string theory and all this, right? But the idea basically is there are an infinite number of universes, all of which are slightly different because of some strange thing that has happened, you know, a unique event that has sent the universe spiraling off into a different path. And one portion of the multiverse has figured out how to travel to all of the other portions of the multiverse. And what this ability does is essentially allows them to download skills and qualities that they would not otherwise have access to. Imagine it like this. Imagine it like the Matrix. You remember the Matrix?
Yes.
Where they download the training programs to their brain, and Keanu Reeves all of a sudden is like, whoa, I know Kung Fu. It's kind of like that. All right. So here, that is the most basic description of the plot mechanics. The reason this matters is because there's a nihilistic entity that is roaming through the multiverse, destroying creation, essentially going from multiverse to multiverse, trying to destroy creation. They have to stop this. Now, I've described the plot to you, but this does no justice to it whatsoever, because what is actually going on is that it is one of the funniest and silliest. I mean, it is a very, very silly movie, and I will spoil one thing for folks. All right, in one of the multiverses, there is you remember the movie Ratatouille?
Oh yes,
with the rat who sits on the chef's head and he pulls.
Yes, we have that music standing by to take you out. I love the Ratatouille music.
Ratatouille, great.
Yeah.
In one of the multiverse universes, there is a raccoonie, which is a raccoon who sits on top of a guy's head and he, manipulates him around so he can do his chef work. That's the sort of thing that happens in this movie. In one of the multiverses, people have hot dogs for fingers. Okay, that's the sort of thing that's going on. It's extremely profoundly silly, but the extreme profound silliness is needed to kind of leaven what is an exceptionally profoundly heartfelt and earnest movie about the importance of family, about the dangers of giving in to nihilistic despair, about the state of the universe, about your inability to change things within it. I am rarely moved emotionally in movies like this, because it is at heart kind of an action comedy type movie, but it is also very profoundly, profoundly moving.
Oh my gosh, it's Ace Ventura meets It's a Wonderful Life.
I'm going to be able to get the Fetching Mrs. Hewitt to go see this the way you've described it, Sonny.
Something like that. I mean, again, there's a lot of slapstick humor. There's also a lot of great martial arts action. It's really well and inventively done. It crosses genres. It borrows from filmmakers very liberally.
How long is it?
It's a little long, but it's not that long. You know, the published runtime, I think, is 100. It's basically 2 hours and 20 minutes, but I don't think it's actually that long. I think it's closer, before credits, it's closer to about 130 minutes, 2 hours, 10 minutes. It is a little bit long. And I am not an advocate of long movies, as you know. I like short movies. I want you to get in and out. But it is worth it for this. It is totally, totally worth it.
Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Everything Everywhere All at Once. It's a truly unique, sui generis sort of experience. I cannot recommend it enough. I think people need to go see it in theaters because this is the sort of, you know, look, if you don't go see a movie like this, a crowd pleasing, and I have never been with a crowd that was as thrilled as they were watching.
Really?
And I have not heard from more random people on Twitter telling me how much they enjoyed it than I have for this movie. You got to go see it.
Yeah, all right. I don't know how long you've got a lot of error miles in your account. You've been doing the official movie critic of the Hugh Hewitt Show for a long time. I don't think I've ever heard you make this kind of a recommendation.
I love this movie. It's the first movie in a long time that I felt. I mean, it's really, I think I said this in my review, which I wrote weeks ago when I saw a preview of it. I went to a paid preview and I came home and I just poured my thoughts out about it immediately. But it's the first movie I've seen since The Matrix and the original Matrix in 1999 that I immediately wanted to see it again. I wanted to go right back to the theater and watch it for a second time. So
let's let that linger right there, Sonny Bunch. Follow Sonny Bunch at Sonny Bunch on Twitter. Listen to him. The Bulwark goes to the movie and across the movie aisle, two podcasts. And like me this week, Fine Time, I'm not going to go during the Masters, but Fine Time, The Fetching Mrs. Hewitt will no doubt want to go to see Everything, Everywhere, All at Once. Thank you, Sonny Bunch. That's really remarkable. He doesn't do that very often. I don't think he's ever done that. Don't go anywhere, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt inside the Beltway on this Friday Live. I want to remind you that our sponsor is andrewandtodd.com. There with Sierra Pacific, they lend you money to refinance your house or buy a home, or help your son or daughter become investors in real estate by becoming a non-occupying co-borrower. They help senior citizens with reverse mortgage. They help veterans with no money down mortgages. They help you refinance. So if you need to get money out of your house or you need a whole new house, go to andrewandtodd.com or call them at 888-888-1172.
Joined now by the poet laureate of the Hugh Hewitt Show. Hello, Joe.
Hello, Hugh. This week, we celebrate the Affordable Care Act, or as we should have called it, the Don't Say Healthy Bill.
Can I stop you for a second? I never stopped you in 30 years.
Go ahead, stop me.
You sound like you got a tire truck on your throat.
It is early in the morning.
Okay, just kind of gravelly, even by Tarzana Joe gravelly standards.
I appreciate your concern, and I will tend to ungravel myself.
You sound like David Mamet this morning, but go ahead.
I did hear him the other night, and he spoke profoundly but painfully, didn't he?
Oh, my gosh, his new book is something else. But let's not be a downer. Go ahead, Tarzana Joe.
We will begin. My poem is Obamacare, but how shall I begin it? After just a dozen years, we finally know what's in it. I didn't keep my doctor, and I didn't keep my plan. My premiums are twice as high. Obama, you're the man. We really ought to celebrate the fullness of the fleecing. Beyond what my insurance costs, my copays keep increasing. We haven't even reckoned with the things they say it cured. All across America, there still are uninsured. The fat are getting fatter, and the sick are getting sicker. It seems that the consensus is the older dying quicker. Fraudsters are still frauding, and still the cheaters cheat. The doctors that I've spoken to say things I can't repeat. They walk around with laptops to show they're in compliance and fear to write prescriptions lest it signals some defiance. There may not be those panels, but the government has minions making sure that doctors don't have medical opinions. I don't give a farthing for what some people say, but it isn't really science if you only must obey. So let's all pop a champagne cork and set the country buzzing. 12 years of Obamacare, and what a dirty dozen. That's Don't Say Healthy by Tarzetta Joe.
You know, Joe, I love that poem. And I love it because President Obama, of course, was celebrating Obamacare this year. But I didn't know what you were going to ride minions with. I didn't see it coming. I thought, oh, that is that's a word too far, minions.
And there is never a word too far.
There's never a word too far. Well, you didn't even have to stretch. Opinions rhymes with minions. Will that be at TarzanaJoe.com?
Of course, of course.
And your voice is back, miraculously.
Yeah, well, just something crawled out of the throat, and I'm fine now.
But someone took their boot off of it. I'm just telling you, if you need a poem, go to TarzanaJoe.com. TarzanaJoe.com is where you can hit the I Want a Poem button, or you can email him at TarzanaJoe@Reagan.com. For all your poetry needs, and today's poem, Don't Say Healthy, will be posted at TarzanaJoe.com, I assume?
Thank you.
Thank you, Joe. Morning Glory America, Bonjour High Canada, Hugh Hewitt live inside the Beltway. This completes the first week on the air for our new affiliate, News Talk for New Bern, North Carolina, 103.9 FM, 1450 AM, WNOS. Welcome. And on Fridays, we do things completely differently. A little of this, a little of that, some sports, some film with Sonny Bunch. But I'm changing it up today. Coming up at the bottom of the hour, David McCormick is running for Senate in Pennsylvania. By having on Dovid Efun, who is the publisher of the New York Sun. The reason I want to do that, Dovid, welcome. It's good to see you. Thank you for joining me this morning.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be with you, Hugh.
Dovid, I want people to know about the New York Sun. I loved the Sun when it was printed, whenever I went to New York. And I follow it on the website, and I think Seth Lipsky is a great editor. You bought it last year late. Why? What do you intend to do with the New York Sun?
Well, it's no secret that despite the fact that there is a hell of a lot of media, newspapers, and news websites in this country today, there really is a crisis that's facing the news media in general. I would refer to it as a crisis in trust. You have trust in media reaching all-time lows. It's more than halved since record-keeping began in 1972. You know, you have huge percentages of Americans who just do not trust newspapers. They don't trust the TV channels that they watch. So we thought that could not be a better time to bring back the New York Sun. The New York Sun has a particular record in connecting well with the American public and bridging that gap between publishers and journalists and the reader and the public that we serve. It declares on its iconic masthead, "It shines for all." And for almost 200 years, that's exactly what it's been doing. I would argue, make the case even, that this is a newspaper for this very moment.
Now, Dovid, I had a friend named Ray Price. He was the opinion page editor of the New York Herald Tribune. He brought me into the world of journalism in 1978 after I graduated from school. And there was a time when New York was full of newspapers. I mean, it was filled to the rim with brimming posts. Now there's the Post. There's the New York Times, of course. Can the New York Sun compete with those brands? Your brand is as old and as good, but can it get out and have the influence with recapitalization and repurposing that those two do?
Certainly. And, you know, it's no secret that some of the papers, especially the New York Times, which was a historic competitor of ours. I mean, we were founded 18 years before the New York Times, and we were sort of neck and neck for quite a long period. And they've sort of moved into a position of dominance, and they've staked their claim as the paper of record. But the truth is they have quite a wide circulation, but very narrow representation. There are many, many millions of Americans. In fact, the New York Times just announced that their 10 millionth paying subscriber. I would wager that there's at least 10 times that number who would like to pay for a better alternative.
And that's what
we're
bringing
to the table.
You're right. I was telling the audience earlier, my show prep begins every morning between 4 and 5 with the Financial Times, the Telegraph, and the Times of Israel, because they're ahead of us. Then I do the Wall Street Journal, then the New York Times, Wall Street, and then I read John Ellis news items by John Ellis. Maybe the New York Sun joins that, but what John Ellis does for me is survey the waterfront. All right, do you have the staff, the resources, et cetera, to cover the world and to cover the country and to cover the state and to cover the city?
Well, you know, one of our specialties, and I know you mentioned Seth in particular, is this our editor, Seth Lipsky, being a giant in so many areas. He's a constitutional scholar, as you know, famously wrote the Citizen's Constitution. But he is an incredible scout of talent. There is a percentage, I don't know what the number is, but of leading journalists and editors in this country who were at one time trained, recruited, mentored by Mr. Lipsky. And I can name a whole bunch of them. Look, we know, and I mentioned this in the speech where we launched, that you could have a newsroom that is vast, but its ideas limited. But you can have a newsroom that's more limited, yet its ideas are vast. And, you know, we see newsrooms that are chock full of journalists, but, you know, they're just monotonous in terms of their ideas, in terms of what they want to cover, what they're interested in. I mean, you saw Ann Applebaum talking the other day about how Hunter Biden wasn't a story. I mean, most of the media, you know, with tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of journalists, decided that wasn't a story. So what the hell? There absolutely is an opportunity. Yeah. There's so much that isn't being covered that the right mind, smart fellows can bring to the table. And I'll just give you some numbers.
Go ahead.
Yeah, we interviewed about 300 folks applying for work at the New York Sun. We've hired about 30 or so of them, and we picked the very, very best and brightest. I mean, these are the smartest and sharpest individuals. You will always find something new and valuable on the pages of the Sun.
That is terrific. You know, the Washington Free Beacon is providing competition. I work for the Post, the Washington Post, so I like the Washington Post, but the Washington Free Beacon provides good competition. I'm glad the New York Sun is there. You mentioned Ann Applebaum. I was going to the Brian Stelter bit from the disinformation conference that Jeffrey Goldberg, very fine writer in the Atlantic's great publication, and David Axelrod, who's a friend of this show and, of course, at the Institute of Politics, they put together this disinformation conference, which is full of disinformation. And I want to play for you a little bit of a University of Chicago student asking Brian Stelter and his non-answer. Can we play that for Dovid, please?
My name is Christopher 10. Phillips. I'm a first year at the college. My question is for Mr. Stelter. You've all spoken extensively about Fox News being a purveyor of disinformation, but CNN is right up there with them. They push the Russian collusion hoax. They push the Jussie Smollett hoax. They smear Justice Kavanaugh as a rapist, and they also smeared Nick Salmon as a white supremacist. And yes, they dismissed the Hunter Biden laptop affair as pure Russian disinformation. With mainstream corporate journalists becoming little more than apologists and cheerleaders for the regime, is it time to finally declare that the canon of journalistic ethics is dead or no longer operative? All the mistakes of the mainstream media and CNN in particular seem to magically all go in one direction. Are we expected to believe that this is all just some sort of random coincidence, or is there something else behind it?
It's too bad. It's time for lunch.
You have 30 seconds.
No, I mean, there's a clock that says 30 seconds. But I think my honest answer to you, and I'll come over and talk in more detail after this, is that I think you're describing a different channel than the one that I watch. But I understand that that is a popular right-wing narrative about CNN.
All right, stop right there. David, then he went on to talk about how journalists work together in war zones. I like Brian. I don't watch his show. I just don't. But I like Brian. Is that responsive, or is that disinformation? And is the whole conceit of that conference disinformation?
You know, I think what it boils down to, you know, at its heart, you know, everybody in the news business, journalists or anchors like Brian, you know, have to ask themselves, you know, what is your guiding star? You know, what is your guiding light? You know, when you sit down and you think about what are you going to cover and how you're going to cover it, what is that one, you know, idea that animates you and drives your decision-making process the most? And at the Sun, you know, historically, the thought we've always had is principles over politics, party, partisanship, and even individual people. You know, when you have almost 200 years of history, you can't get dragged into, you know, the person of the moment or the idea of the moment. It's, you know, you've got to go really back to the basics. So if I'm sitting in the newsroom and, you know, the Hunter Biden story comes up and, you know, it's well documented. It was well documented at the time. There was a lot of evidence for it. If your decision making is on the basis of principle, the principle that corruption in politics or even the appearance of corruption in politics, it's bad for people, it's bad for the country, it's bad for citizens, then of course you cover that. But if you're putting the politics first and you're asking yourself, what is going to help my favorite candidate win the election, then of course you don't cover it. And that's exactly what that young fellow was pointing to. And that's exactly the trouble and what's led to this breakdown in trust when it comes to so many media outlets. They are placing their political interests or their political agenda, whatever it is, above basic journalistic principles like advocating for the American public.
I'm talking with David Efoun, who is the publisher of the New York Sun. David, what are the metrics that you will use for success? It is, 15 minutes after the hour on Friday, April the 8th, I think it's the April the 8th. A year from now, 15 minutes after, what are you going to say means success for the New York Sun?
Well, you know, we've got success, you know, from the business perspective and success from the ideological perspective, the impact that we want to have. Of course, the two are very closely intertwined. If we have an impact, if we make even a small dent in this crisis in trust that exists in the country, if we're able to bring back and restore trust in at least one journalistic enterprise, and, you know, there are many fine journalists out there, and we want to add to that conversation and build on the good work that is being done out there. But, you know, from a business perspective, we're a digital subscriptions business. We need to build, you know, thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of subscribers. And I encourage everybody who's interested in seeing what the Sun is about, check us out. It's nysun.com, www.nysun.com. I got to get that in there, right, Hugh?
You're a publisher, David. nysun.com, nysun.com. Frank Luntz says, if you don't say it seven times, no one hears it. nysun.com, nysun.com. Go and subscribe. David, come back and keep us posted on how it's going. Say hello to Seth Lipsky for me. NYSun.com, America. That's my Friday news tip for you. Stay tuned. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Good morning to you. If it's Friday and you're anywhere in Pennsylvania, you want to listen closely. If you're anywhere that you're following the race for the Senate, you want to listen closely. Dave McCormick is running for Senate in Pennsylvania to succeed Pat Toomey. Dave McCormick joins me by the phone. Dave, welcome back. You have surged into the lead now in the GOP primary. It looks like you'll be up against John Fetterman. I do not endorse in primaries. If you want me to come up and moderate a debate, I'll be happy to. But to what do you owe your success in the polling?
Well, good morning, Hugh. Thanks for having me. I announced my campaign in mid-January, and since then, I've been, you know, in my Ford pickup driving from county to county, talking to folks about the challenges they face, and, you know, they're frightened, and they think the country's going in a terrible direction. And I think the fact that I've been battle tested, I'm a guy who served in the military, who, you know, built a business and in Pennsylvania, helped create jobs, and someone who's been a seventh generation Pennsylvanian, I have a family farm there. I think that message is resonating. But listen, it's 5 weeks to the primary. There's a number of Pennsylvanians, about 30%, that haven't decided in the primary. And so I've got my head down and just focused on making my case to the great people of our Commonwealth.
Dave McCormick, has voting begun in Pennsylvania yet? Because they do have an early vote problem there or issue there.
Not quite yet in the coming weeks.
You're being humble. You are a Bronze Star recipient, which I did not know until I brushed up for the interview from the 1991 Gulf War. And you're a West Point graduate and you're a member of the 82nd. When Joe Biden was with the 82nd in Poland, what were you thinking? Good for the world, good for America, good for the 82nd? Or is it better to keep the commander in chief off the air when he doesn't stay on the script?
Well, listen, I look at what's happening in Ukraine, and I honestly tie it back to the weakness of the Biden administration and Joe Biden. I think two things. Afghanistan, the debacle that we saw there, the incompetence, really was a signal to the world that that we're weak and tyrants should test us. And then the energy policy, which it really affects Pennsylvania, which took us overnight from being an energy exporter to an energy importer and enabled Putin. I think those two things got us there. Now that we're there, now that we're in this situation, I think we have to be very, very forthcoming with lethal aid to the Ukrainians to help them fight the battle, to really squeeze Putin with sanctions, and also reverse the energy policies. That's the biggest way to put pressure on. I do not think that the 82nd Airborne or any of our troops should be deployed into this situation. I think we need to take care not to get dragged in to a situation there. I've gone across Pennsylvania back and forth many times in the last 3 months. I haven't met a single Pennsylvanian who wants to send their son or daughter to Ukraine, and they're tired of 20 years of war, and where Pennsylvanians pay the disproportionate price. So we got to stand strong and help the Ukrainians, but we got to be careful not to get dragged into something that we're not ready to do.
I'm talking with Dave McCormick, candidate for Senate in Pennsylvania to succeed Pat Toomey. Dave, I grew up 7 miles from Sharon. I know I went to camp at Lake Erie in the summer. I know that part of the state. I know the Steelers fans, sadly, all too well. Where are you strongest, and where do you have to work the hardest because of the Democratic machine?
Yeah, well, I'm, you know, I grew up in Bloomsburg, which is in the northeast part of Pennsylvania. That is, I have a family farm there. That's very strong, a base Republican area, and I've been spending a lot of time there. That's where, you know, I played football and wrestled when I was growing up, and that's a big part of my campaign. But I went after the Army. I went back to Pittsburgh, and I ran a business there. So I have great ties in the West, and I have great relationships and ties in the Northeast, and that's, I'm showing up strong in the polls. The area that I'm spending a lot of time in is the Southeast, Philadelphia, the five counties outside of Philadelphia. Those are really important. They have a large share of the primary voters and the general election voters. And I'm making my case to the folks there, you know, in diners and VFWs and fire halls, and it's resonating, but I'm spending a lot of time trying to make sure I introduce myself to the people of that part of our state.
Well, we're talking in markets across the state live right now to many, many people. Let me ask you, what's the website? Where can people go check you out?
DaveMcCormickPA.com.
DaveMcCormickPA.com. All right. Yeah. Now, if you're successful, and again, I'm not endorsing, but it does look to me like you're going to be the nominee. You got to go up against this lefty. And I mean, Fetterman is way, way to the left. And he uses his size. Yeah, you know, interestingly, you're not as big as he is, but you're the wrestler and the soldier. I'm just curious what you think is going to happen in the fall, because he is all hot air. I mean, he could be a radio talk show host yesterday and do very fine. And, you know, frequently wrong, never in doubt. I know the rules, but that's not good in a senator.
Yeah, well, listen, if I'm the man representing our great party in that, I like that lineup. For the following reasons. First, we can run, we as Republicans, and I will run, on ideas. I mean, we have such a contrast between the America First policies, what happened in the previous administration, the economy, energy policy, border, and what's happening now, which is an absolute disaster on all those. You know, 40-year high in inflation, energy dependence, wide-open border that's driving the fentanyl crisis in Pennsylvania. And so to really go hard at those ideas and force Fetterman to either defend those policies or explain how those outcomes are good for Pennsylvanians, not Republicans or Democrats, all Pennsylvanians. So that's the first thing. Second thing, I agree with you. Here's a guy that went to Harvard and has a trust fund who's running a campaign that he's representing the forgotten people of Pennsylvania. And I think my background is a combat vet. My background is someone who's created jobs. My background is someone who really understands the economy, which is the issue that's on everybody's mind, will match, and someone who's side the front of a paycheck, not just the back of it. That'll match up well with whoever the nominee is on the Democratic side.
Dave McCormick, let's talk a little bit about armed forces. I went to a dinner on Tuesday night in D.C. with 11 smart people and me. I was the journalist in the room, and the 11 smart people had three admirals among them and two legislators. One of whom was on SASC and one of whom was on HASC, and our defense is in a mess. Do you want to be on the Senate Armed Services Committee? Because it's a nightmare. They really do not have a prioritization. They are getting a real cut in defense spending after inflation.
Yep.
And I'm afraid it's your branch of the service that's going to have to take the hit when it comes to personnel. But what do you think?
Yeah, listen, I'm terribly worried about it. I think that there's a number of warning signs. First is the one you're saying, which is the real impact of the budget that's being proposed by Biden would be a decrease in defense spending because of inflation. And I think it's a time when the military is going to be called upon, sadly, and that the world is more dangerous than any time in the last 20 or 30 years. And so I think getting the right resources there with the right leadership is critical. And I don't think we have the right leadership in our officer corps and our civilian officials under this administration. I don't think we have the right warfighting mentality. That's the first problem. Second problem, I'm worried about the allocation of our defense spending. You know, we have to be looking over the horizon, and we've had a history of fighting the last war. And we now are in a situation where the nature of the battlefield has changed dramatically, and we need next generation weaponry. We need to be thinking about asymmetric challenges from China and others, and we're not prepared. And then the third thing, which is maybe the most worrying, is a culture of social engineering, and a culture that's really being driven by this wokeness that comes at the expense of a warfighting culture. And I think those three things put us in a position where we really need dramatic changes in leadership in our Pentagon, in our military. And unfortunately, until we change out the occupants of the White House and get a majority in the Senate and the House, we're not going to see that.
Dave McCormick is my guest. He's running for Senate in Pennsylvania. Dave, the Bob Work, who's a Democrat, DepSecDef under President Obama and Undersecretary of the Navy, was on this week talking about the third offset. And that is, the second offset was the war in which you fought, the JDAMs, the long-distance munitions. The third offset is asymmetrical warfare in a number of ways. I all view it as an excuse to build down our defense spending. I also worry, as Mike Gallagher has said, congressman from Wisconsin, integrated deterrence is no deterrence at all. So my question, you actually know this stuff, but what committees do you want to be on when you, if you win to the Senate? Do you want to tackle defense, or do you want to tackle trade? What do you want to tackle?
Well, I don't want to be thinking about things beyond even the primary. So I don't want to be presumptuous on anything. But I do think that as a senator, I will be unique in that I've got a depth of military experience, and I'm someone who understands the economy. I've served in a senior position in economic policy, and I've run global businesses. And that combination of national security and economic security is really where the world's headed. You don't have technologies that are military technology or that are economically driven technology. Really, the leadership of our economy, the leadership in the world, depends on the intersection of the two. And whether that's the Armed Services Committee or the Intel Committee, those committees need to be thinking about things much more broadly than we have in the past. And we need a whole-of-nation strategy for dealing with China, as an example, that really incorporates our economic strength and our military strength in an integrated way. We don't have that today, and we don't have the policies that support it. Let me give you one example. If you look at our semiconductor industry, which now is getting a lot of attention, the fact that we're dependent on the rest of the world for the large majority of our semiconductors, and the fact that our economy and our national security apparatus is so dependent on semiconductors, the fact that we got ourselves in this position is a strategic dilemma and such a failed set of decisions. And yet that's where we are. And so that's the kind of focus that I'd like to bring on whatever committee I serve on.
Okay, last question, Dave. We're running out of time. We've got about a minute left. Your pitch to the people of Pennsylvania. Why you and not the other Republicans on the ballot?
I am someone who has served my country in a number of different times. I'm battle-tested. I've served in our military. I've served in the government at the highest levels. I've run businesses during good times and bad. And I'm Pennsylvania true. I'm a seventh-generation kid. I grew up in Pennsylvania. I served in our great military, and then I came back to Pennsylvania and created jobs. And I'm an outsider. I don't owe anybody anything. I'm a first-time candidate. And there's not time for on-the-job training. I am someone who can step into the job and make a difference on day one. If you want to know what on-the-job training looks like, look at Kamala Harris. That's on-the-job training.
Yeah.
We need a senator from Pennsylvania that can hit the ground on day one running and can make a big difference, not just for Pennsylvania, but for our great country and help win back the Senate.
Hey, bonus question. Governor Youngkin was on this show a lot when he was running, and they attacked him for being successful in business. It did not work. Terry McAuliffe lost, and all the attacks on being a successful investor businessman at the Carlyle Group failed. Are you finding that they're bouncing off of you in the Keystone State as well? Yeah, I mean, you're a very successful businessman, and they're trying to make that a deficit.
I really am. I mean, people welcome it. They're proud of those among them who succeed. They just want to make sure that their kids had the same opportunities that I had. I started with nothing, and I ended up in a great spot due to a lot of good luck and some hard work. And I want to make sure everybody in Pennsylvania has it. So I haven't felt any resentment on that. I have only felt encouragement to make sure that everybody has the same great American dream opportunity that I've had and that many of us have had. And that's the thing that's slipping away, Hugh. And that's why I'm running.
Well said. Envy is the oldest playbook in the world, and it doesn't work anymore. Dave McCormick, come back during the primary. We got 5 weeks of the voting in Pennsylvania. If you're the nominee, live here. Just put a cot. We'll talk to Pennsylvania every day, even the Steelers fans. Hey, thank you, Dave McCormick. Stay tuned. I'll be right back on the Hugh Hewitt Show.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.